Been doing this since the early 90s.
Call this finance meeting to order. Approval of September 8th, 27th, 27th, and 27th. Any additions or corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Vince Spagliati. Good morning.
Good morning.
Since the August 18th flood, we've been taking money from our road projects and our highway maintenance accounts to pay for the flood repairs. And we have, we still have a lot more rock work to do to protect the slopes of the channels and concrete work to do where the bridges were undermined. The only places I have left are consultants and professionals, but that we need for the engineer we hired, the engineering firm we hired to build, design the bridges next year. So the only other thing is personal services. And so I want to take $125,000 out of engineering, personal services, and $50,000 out of the permanent improvements, personal services for rock and concrete.
So move.
Second.
Do we get reimbursed for any of this?
We don't know yet.
Very likely, but it's just a matter of going through the process. But we've documented all the damage and all costs associated with it, and a lot of these things will show as backup.
So hopefully this will be, some of it will be replaced.
I would,
the expenses.
We're going to get, now that it's been signed, we will receive funds for the damage we received.
I have that same question, Gary. Jack, how does it work exactly? If FEMA does come in and reimburse this, does like the 125 go right back into salary and wages where it came from? Or does it just come in as a lump sum?
Generally come in as a lump sum, and then we're going to have to work with them. I've never personally been through something of this size where, you know, significant personal services, overtime, all those things were needed. So we'll keep you posted as we work through with FEMA, but it generally would come back as a lump sum, probably back to your general fund because you're expending these funds to fix it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you.
Tim? Morning.
Good morning. Just to dovetail off from the previous discussion, with the FEMA disaster declaration, it's a 75-25 match. So 25% is local. Typically, the state picks up 12.5% of that 25%. We've been talking with the state officials. We're hoping that maybe they'll pick up the whole 25, but again, that's yet to be seen. So,
and there is precedence for that. In past storms, the state has picked up the entire local share, and our state representatives are already pushing their contacts at New York State to advocate for that.
So I just wanted to just clarify that discussion that
Thank you.
You previously had. All right, two items for you this morning. First is the 911 phone upgrade. We have a capital project to upgrade the 911 systems within the 911 center. One thing that needs to be done is the phone system. I presented this to Public Safety and Corrections last week. However, in the process of reviewing things, we determined that there were two options that we should probably take from the beginning of the project rather than do a change order and pay extra fees and services beyond what discounts we'll get for the original. So the total now for the new project would be $525,766.90. That's a difference of $94,962.76 from what I presented at Public Safety and Corrections. This is a 7-year agreement. So the first year we would pay for the equipment, professional services, and then the maintenance and the recurring services on that. So the initial payment would be $269,603.80, and then subsequent years would be ongoing maintenance for the system for the following 6 years beyond the first year.
All right, how do we want to handle this since public safety has not authorized?
So you folks can authorize it, and then it would go to a special public safety before the legislative meeting. If for some reason they didn't, then it would essentially go back, well,
through the process.
We'd have to figure it out. One committee could do it. So essentially you folks could just forward it on to the full legislature, but that's not how
we have a special meeting that. Right now.
Yeah. They haven't noticed folks, but yeah. So we were planning on a special meeting prior.
Tim, what are the changes that change the price?
So we would be adding the text to 911 right into the phone system. Currently, that's a third-party vendor that's done on a separate system. This would integrate it right into the phone system, so it's all part of the ongoing capabilities of the one screen rather than having to go to various different other screens. The other thing is we have three laptops that will allow us to do remote phone answering, whether that be in the EOC, a command post on scene someplace, or another remote location. With those three laptops, we need a virtual private network to be able to connect into those laptops wherever they are. So that would be the additional services that would be added in.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
So is this going to be a continual fee then, correct?
Yeah, the continued fee would be $42,693.85 for each year for the 6 years following the initial implementation. Currently, right now, our maintenance contract with this company is $73,774.05. So we're cutting almost in half our maintenance fee by going to the new system.
How much is the third-party vendor that you're currently paying for that text to 911?
I'm not familiar with how much that cost is. I don't know if Tina's on, if she could. I don't see her on this morning, but.
It should still represent some kind of savings. It'd be interesting to know.
And the thing is with next generation and where we're going with 911 and the capabilities of the system, you want that integrated right into your phone system, not on a separate system so that, you know, you've got something else that has to, that could potentially go wrong. You've got one vendor that you can point to say, you know, this needs to function the way that it functions.
Sure. Agree 100%.
I had another question, Tim. Is it usual to pay a maintenance fee the first year?
No, the first year will be under warranty. There is recurring services and maintenance services for some of these functions, but there is a substantial discount that first year for a lot of those services. So the 1 year, I believe, is covered.
I think it was $36,000 or $32,000, if I remember.
It was last, what we talked about during public safety was $31,748. And that cost has gone to $42,693.
So is it usual to pay that fee the first year out?
No, that would be the continual years after.
After?
Oh. Yes. It's a seven-year agreement. That first year is pretty much the equipment and the personnel services for installing the equipment, and then 6 years of maintenance after that.
Okay. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Okay. Last item, I have to come to you and request contingency funds for the coroner's budget. We need about $40,000 to get us through the rest of the year with the coroner's budget. This has been an unusual year with a high number of unattended deaths. And currently, right now, there's less than $12,000 left in the coroner's budget for the rest of the year. And that's to pay the We've got outstanding balances for the medical examiner's office, as well as the testing and lab services. So I need about $40,000 to get us through the rest of the year.
We'll move.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. Are you Hank? Morning, Hank.
Morning,
Hank.
Morning,
everyone.
I just have two budget adjustments. First one is from State Office Alcohol and Substance Abuse. We recently received $6,905 from State Oasis for cost of living adjustment. So I'm looking to get your approval to accept the funding and pass it on to the service providers as listed.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you. Second budget adjustment is from Office of Mental Health. We recently received $23,721 for COLA. So looking to get your approval to accept that funding and pass it on to the service providers.
So moved.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Anything else, Hank?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Patty?
Okay. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I think most of you have heard this already, so I'll be brief. I just need approval to accept $85,000 of unmet need funds. We're going to use $51,250 in 2021 and the remainder of $33,750 in 2022. This is recurring funding.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you. So with these funds, we want to increase Comfort Keeper's contract by $10,000. And this is our home care level one, which is housekeeping care.
Motion.
Second.
Well, we
do
take
all
them
all together.
Yep.
Give us a whole shot.
Okay. So Center for Elder Law and Justice increased by $5,000. Corny Meals on Wheels increased $10,000. IHS employment contract increased by $13,750. And that's it.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion on any? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brad.
Good morning. Is it still
morning,
on?
Morning, Tammy.
Still on. Yay. Any questions on the monthly reports, the normal budget transfers and or capital projects?
So I just see that you're buying two televisions for finance. What are your favorite shows?
Yes. Hopefully they'll come in. Well, they already are coming in useful. We're using them for the Munis remote sessions so that we don't have to relocate every time. And I can work while listening and watching the presenter. Anything else?
Mm-mm.
Very good. If you don't mind, if we can do the investment policy, Mitch will do that. I'll just do all of my things and then we can loop back around and do the investment policy stuff all together.
That's fine.
The interfund transfer to the Economic Development Fund, I sent out a memo about that one as well as the capital projects. We are going to be a negative in the Economic Development Fund it by end of year. So rather than move all of those costs to the general fund, it made sense to just move some money from the general fund to the Economic Development Fund, and we're requesting that be $500,000, which would carry it for a few years.
and this all relates to the timing of the contract. Well, it's essentially, but we, you know, have been kept apprised by NYSAC, and it looked like there was some resolution. It's the deal with the Senecas. This is the money that we get from them, and they're withholding their payments to the state and have been doing so for a while. And it looks like it was going to get resolved and then didn't. And so at some point in time, we're going to receive very likely a pretty good influx of all of these years that they've not paid. So this might be a short term. And then when that money comes in, you can choose whether to put it back in the economic development fund or, you know, put it into general fund because you're transferring from the general fund now. But it's right. Essentially, we're just waiting on the Senecas in New York State to straighten out.
Well, that answers one of the questions I had in my budget book.
Oh, pull that sticky right out of there, Scott.
And you said the $500,000 will get us through for a while. How long?
Yes, I think we usually budget a couple hundred out of there per year.
Without additional influx, it's at least 2 years, I'd say.
I'll move it.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
The second item with many pieces, or at least three pieces, is the continuing to clean up the capital projects as we're working through the Munis conversion. I discovered two additional projects that somehow I missed on the first go round. So one is the I didn't actually miss that one. That one ended up, they had a refund of $4.09. So we do need to go ahead and transfer that and then close it. The second one is a second records project that I missed the first time around. And that one I would just like to close into the records digitization project. It's an old microfilming project with about 7,500 in it.
So move.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
The second piece is to appropriate and unappropriate some estimated revenues within the IT capital project, where we budget for the IT equipment. There's some pluses and some minuses there that we just need to clean up so that we can move that with zero balances. We're not going to close it. We're just going to clean up those balances, as well as 3020H3, which is a 911. We had some state aid way back in 2012 that never was appropriated, along with a little bit of interest. So we'd like to appropriate that within the project itself.
So I'll move.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
And the last bit is to, these are old projects that I presume came in to e-finance with odd budgetary balances. The actuals are all fine. It's just the budgetary balances that are weird. So I've been struggling with how to fix those before we move into Munis, and came to the conclusion that we could just transfer the actuals and then reappropriate those into a new project number. So we'd basically be closing the old project number, moving all of the actual remaining budgets into a new budget number for the same purpose and function. Just, it's just a technical way to clean it up.
So move.
Second.
What was the function of that?
There's a whole list. There's about, I think, 17 we ended up with, because one of them we're going to close in a different manner. So there, I think there's 17 projects, different projects.
Is there a total dollar amount?
I didn't take the total. Again, it's not changing the function. It looks like it's in excess of probably 5 million. We've got the IT project is one of those, and that's got a balance of 3.8
okay.
right now. So, which includes the Munis implementation. It's not all IT equipment. In case Rob's listening.
And where are we putting that?
We're just moving. It's all we're doing is taking the exact, we're taking the individual projects and,
right.
and creating a new project number within okay. the system and transferring the balances from the old project number to the new project number. No change in, like I said, no change in function or purpose. It's just to kind of
yep.
let those old project numbers die a natural death in e-finance and not have to move them into
right.
Munis.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
And then with respect to Munis, I zipped up a short little blurb, which I'm happy to send out if anyone wants it. But we've been meeting regularly with our implementer. We've had, I think, 15 full day sessions so far, and we're scheduled for the next 2 weeks. We have 6 more days scheduled this week and next week, and then we get a week off, and then we go back at it again. There's tentatively, well, for sure next week is on site here, and then probably it's scheduled, as long as she's able to make the trip. We'll have 2 weeks in a row, November 15th through 19th. Oh, sorry. There'll be a week, November 15th through 19th, and then 2 weeks in a row, starting November 30th and ending December 10th. Our environments have been uploaded to the cloud, so they now exist. They actually do 4 environments: a testing environment, a training environment, an implementation environment, and then the actual live production environment. So those are all out there on the cloud. We've been having a little bit of technical difficulties being able to get to them because it authenticates you as a user using our network. It's called Active Directory. I don't really understand it all. It's IT kind of stuff. But there's been a few problems with that, getting our system to communicate with their system. I think that's been resolved. We were able to get in last week, but we weren't able to see menus. So hopefully that'll all be fixed before the onsite next week. But that's still an ongoing investigation. The chart of accounts development is progressing. We have... it's a complicated process, but there you have to create segments, and then you have to create organizations, and then you have to create actual full account strings. And we're up to the creating the full account strings section, which is going to be slow and tedious because we have to take all of our existing and convert it to the new numbering system that we created within Munis. So we were able to keep a lot of our budget orgs, what we call, you know, like the department numbers, but pretty much every single account number is now different, the expenditure numbers.
Oh,
so we have to go kind of one at a time. So that will take a little bit of a while, but it's working. It's going. We're starting. So that's the Munis update. Any questions about where we're at with that? It is as much time as we expected it to be. We do not need the executive session. The two property owners did not come through and request their hardship by last Friday, so we don't need the executive session. But Mitch has all of the investment policy and 3+1 information.
By totally changing the account numbers, you lose all prior year reference ability, don't you?
We purchased conversion, so they will be converting 2020 year end totals, 2021 year end totals, and at the time we convert in 2022 year to date.
Okay.
But it'll just be totals. It won't be any history.
Yeah.
But the anticipation is that we'll keep eFinance alive as long as we can, so that detail history is out there and available to us. We just would have to go there to look at it.
Okay.
But hopefully, you know, barring any major issues, we'll be able to see like totals by account number.
Okay.
Which again complicates it because you have to retain the old and the new and give them the crosswalk and all right.
Okay. Thank you.
So good morning. And as you may recall, sorry about that. We had been to the committee earlier this year in anticipation of receiving the ARPA funds to amend the investment policy to increase limits and add one depository. So at that time, we let you know we'd likely be back, and that's why we're here today. And we're looking to do a few things. We'd like to bring our investment policy into line with New York State statutes and add depositories to be used for investment purposes. As far as the changes to the investment policy, just to summarize, as I said, we're bringing our policy into line with the New York State statutes. And New York State recently expanded the investment opportunities for counties, and basically gave counties the ability to do five different things: invest in general obligation bonds, obligations of a corporation, so long as they're have a high rating, bankers acceptances, obligations of any agency of the United States government, and also finally no load money market mutual funds. So we'd like to add those items to our investment policy as permitted options. The second item is a method of securing and collateralizing deposits. We didn't previously have a pledge of pro rata portion of a pool of eligible securities. So essentially, a bank doesn't have to go out and obtain a security to collateralize our funds. They can pledge a portion of something that they already have and earmark it to collateralize our deposits. So those two items we'd like to add. And the third, we wanted to add language to the policy to basically address a process and establish a procedure for adding depositories mid-year. The policy was silent on that earlier. And then finally, as I said, add depositories. There are 19 that we're looking to add. These would be primarily for investment purposes. And quite frankly, we don't know that we'll use them all, this will allow us to take advantage if we see a good rate that we want to take advantage of. So we're asking for those depositories to be added as well. And it's probably, I can probably, since it's related, just kind of give the update on where we are with 3+1 and our relationship with them. So just to kind of highlight some of the things, we executed the agreement with them in July, received our initial liquidity analysis in August. And the results of that, they found that 98% of county balances are providing value. So they gave us a score of 4 out of 5 stars on that item. As far as our liquidity proficiency, they felt that we are doing a good job. They gave us 5 out of 5. Our effective yield was also fairly good. We're above the Treasury benchmark. And obviously with any analysis like this, there's room for improvement. So our two areas of improvement are cash flow optimization. We got a 0.5 star out of 5. Something we look to improve upon, as far as automation and consolidation of accounts and that type of thing. They gave us 2.5 stars out of 5 for our investment policy. So part of the reason we're also here today to try to improve that score a little bit. We're in our fourth month with 3+1. One of the things they recently were able to do for us, we had been getting 0.01% in one of our general checking accounts. Using the leverage that they have with working with good volume of municipal customers, they were able to secure us a 0.2% rate for that checking account that the bank plans to maintain for a minimum of 6 months. So, still small interest rates that we're talking, but that's a pretty significant improvement over what we had been getting. So, based on what we've had in an average balance in that account over several months, over 6 months that the bank plans to maintain that rate, with our average balance that we've had, that'll yield over $46,000, I'm sorry, in interest that we would not have received previously, which if you recall, the contract 4-3 plus one is a $40,625 contract. So just that one action has made it worth doing. So, and I've found them very good to work with and had very good experience so far. So wanted to share that with you and give you that update. And as I said at the beginning, we're looking to update the investment policy and add the depositories as I've kind of outlined. So.
Yeah, John.
Yeah, under permitted investments, item 7, obligations of the county is due Ben, but only with monies in a reserve fund. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah.
So if we sat out there and bonded something, but reserved the money, we could actually buy our own bond back.
I believe that's what that does. Let me read that a little bit more. Yeah, I believe that's what it is, but I can get back to you on exactly what that would entail. I think an important thing to note is I think the municipal banking industry is still because these investment options were only recently added by the state. The market is still trying to figure out exactly what products to offer municipalities like us. So we're, I think, at a point where a lot of the investment options that are permitted aren't necessarily even really available yet. I can get back to you on that one.
Well, and I guess my point here is that we have one bond obligation out at this point on this building, which we can sit out there and buy back after 5 years or whatever it was, you know. So I'd be interested in see where that's at. So
sure.
Should we leave that in the policy if we don't really know exactly what it means?
I think so. I mean, as I said, I think what we're trying to do is bring our policy into line with what the statutes allow. So it's not something we have to pursue, but at least it's in our policy to use as an option.
And that interest increase that you were saying of $46,000, is that for just the 6 month period that the bank agreed to the higher interest rate, or is that calculated for a year?
That's 6 months.
Okay, thank you.
We need a resolution for.
I'll move it.
Second. So when these, when you start changing this, is that going to be done internally between Tammy and yourself?
Changing.
Well, the investments, moving money from one investment to another.
Yes.
Is there going to be some notification back
to
the finance committee?
Yeah. So we've added 19 authorized depositories with this action. And so, you know, we have done some due diligence on those. They're all, I think 15 of the 19 are rated by Bauer Financial as 5 stars and 4 are 4 stars. So they're all very highly rated. Quite frankly, the process, we probably won't have to with, you know, because we've added 19 depositories, we probably won't need to add more anytime, but the procedure would be, so we will annually reauthorize the depositories by resolution and basically have a resolution approving of Appendix A of the investment policy with the banks and that are on that list. And if we would like to add a depository that's not currently on the list, we would the Commissioner of Finance would have authority to add that depository. It would be reported to the Finance Committee the next month.
No offshore accounts.
or cryptocurrency, right? and then in the next annual reauthorization, we would approve everything that had been done since. So like I said, that probably is not something that's going to happen often, but we wanted to have a procedure in place. So.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you.
You're up. Okay, so a number of items for you. All of these in some fashion have been discussed at previous committees. The first four, which are ARPA funding requests, have been approved by the previous standing committee. So take them one by one if you're okay with that. The Steuben Prevention Coalition ARPA funding request, which was approved by Human Services. This is for sending two students to the Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America conference in Washington, D.C., and the amount is $8,500.
Number two.
I either vote or not, or we need some.
No motion.
Okay, then that would.
So if you want a motion, I'll make it to bring it to a vote. So is that what you want?
Well, you don't, if there's no motion, it would just go to the legislature with, it wouldn't.
I'll second John's motion.
Okay, Human Services.
You need finance.
You need,
yep.
Finance to proceed.
Okay.
Right.
So we have a motion and a second. So,
yep. Any discussion? I think we've had quite a discussion.
Agreed.
All in favor? Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Number two, the Steuben Opioid Prevention Committee. Requested ARPA funding for the 3,000 Dispose RX medication packets and the medication lock boxes, which Hilda showed. And that request is for $4,570.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. You were a no then?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. Cornell Cooperative Extension, that was reviewed by AIP. And the request is for $6,700 for a large format printer.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries.
Okay, thank you. And the final request for you this month is soil and water. And the on your sheet, as we've discussed previously, there yep. was other items listed, but the primary request is for $320,000 for 18 projects between this year and 2023. As we noted in those committees, the federal funding has, there's a lag right now.
Right.
I'll move.
Second.
Discussion.
I have a question. So what happens if that money actually comes back
in? Boys, turn your mic on, please.
What happens if that money actually comes back in? Does it go back into ARPA funding or does it go back into general?
So if soil and water gets that money, it would be theirs. So you're essentially giving them additional funds. At that point in time, when the next budget comes, you would have a discussion of, because we have the base in your budget, you have the base allocation that helps support salaries and other things, and then you have a project allocation. You could, if they get that money, reduce that project allocation should you choose, or if you don't do anything, they just have that money to do additional projects
with. Would we know though that they receive that money?
We could ask them specifically to notify us if they do.
We can ask what their fund balance is. That's a good indicator.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
OK. Okay, and thank you. It was mentioned at AIP, but I'll mention it again because the other request that we have on the sheet was from the Steuben County Agricultural Society, and they listed a number of projects, and the committee, I believe, well, the reopening recovery committee asked what the fund balance of the Agricultural Society is, and Mr. Pelham advised me at the moment that he wrote it, it was $143,000. So just putting that on your radar. Okay, thank you. And the final item I have was a discussion at AIP. Again, I think most of you were there or part of that discussion, and that was VRBO. I mentioned Jen did a great job and was able to get information from Sullivan County, who were aware that has a voluntary collection agreement with VRBO very recently. So we reached out to their attorneys and government relations people when we finally got contact information that Jen was able to get. And they advised us that, I think the exact words were, they are not in a position at this time to entertain additional compliance efforts, voluntary compliance efforts. So AIP then had the discussion, what do we do? What are the options? And certainly for short-term rentals, you do have the ability to, I guess it would be an amendment of the local law that specifies these things. So asked us to come to finance with that, have some work to do, and Jen can probably talk about it and a little bit of nuances in terms of the collection. And we have this voluntary collection agreement with Airbnb. Do we put an exemption in that local law that any organizations with a voluntary collection agreement are not subject to this? That's sort of our thought, since you're already getting the Airbnb collection. If you don't exempt them, we're going to have to look through the contract and go through that whole thing and figure out what we have to do. But essentially, you're getting collections from them anyhow. So that's one caveat that we wanted to talk about. The other that Tammy has brought up is obviously enforcement. We have to work through the enforcement mechanisms of this. Should you folks choose to expand short-term rentals to the room tax collections?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways to work. I had sent some examples to Tammy and Jack after we had the discussion. I guess it was last week. We have a current hotel tax. Occupancy tax from the 80s. It's been amended several times. That just defines who you collect the tax from a hotel and motel. So you could go the route of amending that and changing the definition of who you collect from to individuals that rent premises for less than 30 days, month to month. You know, you could change that and leave it kind of as is as far as enforcement mechanisms presently. If they don't pay by a date, it's quarterly. If they don't pay, then there's a process where Tammy's office essentially sends a letter. They have a right to a hearing if they haven't paid in a period of time after that. Since I've been here, we've never had to go that route. We've had to walk down that path a little ways, but we've never had to go all the way down the path. So there's that option. The other option is you could kind of start over. I took a look at some other counties that have it in place that would tax the individuals that rent these homes out under Vrbo and Airbnb. So we would collect from the individual when they rent via Vrbo. We could carve out Airbnb because Airbnb already collects that. And then you could do different enforcement mechanisms. It's a choice by you guys. I'm not sure how to proceed from here. I think we could give you options. I could draft local laws to present for next month with the options, and we could have a better discussion after you see what I'm talking about. Yates County does do kind of a two-tiered enforcement where they do have the sheriff put a lien and send out a warrant and put a lien on personal property and real property. That is an option. I see that a little bit of some real extra work added possibly to some departments. Tammy in my office, monitoring sales when there's liens on properties, collecting liens on personal property. You start to get into a little bit of a debt collector situation.
But wouldn't that encourage homeowners that want to use those mechanisms to use an agency that has a voluntary agreement in place.
I would, because think so.
You wouldn't want to have, and why would you want to collect it and pay it if Airbnb does it for you?
Yeah, no, I think so. That would, and you know, it's that would be what logic would do. But if you went with VRBO and you had to pay it yourself and you didn't, Tammy and I have to sit down and talk a little bit about how we would envision this. But that would be, you know, we'd be a debt collector in some aspects. The other way is probably the same, a debt collector. But my concern is Tammy's office monitoring this. So I don't know if she...
Well, the other issue would be, how would you even know who's renting your house that way? You wouldn't know. That's even still voluntary, isn't it?
It really is. I don't know. And I mean, we can talk to other counties and see how they're doing it, but it's like, you almost have to monitor what's out there.
You know, VRBO, yeah. And try to look,
yeah, I mean, it starts to get to be knowing. I think, you know, when these laws passed, like several of the counties they passed maybe about 2012, I don't think it was as used. Now that it's a big volume, I don't know how they're tracking it, but we can see how they're tracking it. They've got to have a mechanism.
Mike, what's your idea on this? You're out there amongst the people. Do you see this being misused very much, or people renting
used as far as
people renting their places out for less than a month? And that's not going through the some type of organization.
I think we're seeing more and more individuals doing their own rentals because of the internet. And a lot of that business, what they try to achieve is they try to get repeat business. So every year, the same people come back. So I've seen a lot more of that. Yeah, the people do it on their own.
Do you know how Yates is tracking that, since you do work in that county as well? On the lake, have you had any experience with that?
No. I heard originally they drive around and write down the people's name and address. Yeah.
License plates.
Well, maybe we could get the IRS involved, seeing they're going to monitor our bank accounts now.
I mean, do we really want to get into this nitpicking area and have a chair show up at your door or whatever? I don't know.
Well, I think that we have to have some kind of push in order to get VRBO. You saw the email with how much Airbnb sales tax that we collected.
Right.
And we're missing out on that on VRBO, maybe not to the same extent, because I'm not sure if they're used as much, but they collect sales tax for other states, other places. And to say that they don't have the time or whatever to take on another contract or another negotiation is a bunch of bunk. Comply with the law.
So the simplest way of going about this is to amend the original local law
from 1980.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like Jen said, the definition of what an accommodation is.
Yeah, and it's hotel, motel, less
that, hotel, right, motel, is, less than 30 days.
And there was that whole thing about what the amenities they also provide. So we have to be, that's where we're tripped up a little bit before. If you remember discussions from years ago is, you know, do they offer turn down service? Do they offer food? Do they offer, like, that's some of the nuances that we have to talk about in the amendment. But I think we did very, very clearly define 30 day or less short term rentals.
Yeah. That sounds a lot cleaner.
Exactly.
I would agree. Amending it is going to be more straightforward than.
And then you pick up all of them, like the hip camp and all that kind of stuff. I mean,
yeah.
We should be working with our Conference of Visitors Bureau when we do this.
Yeah. And it does talk about campgrounds are exempt if you bring your own camper. But there are campgrounds that rent campers. So that would pick them up, just a heads up.
And the cabins.
And the cabins.
It technically already does.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, we only had one of the campgrounds that rented cabins pay, and the rest not, but I think that has since been straightened out.
I think so too.
Carol?
Yeah, do you think there's any chance that VRBO would open up later on, because they're really the high-end renter, they're the big bucks.
It's kind of, that's a line that I've never really walked in terms of that's more your realm of how much pressure I guess it's the first question, apply in that case?
I think, as Ms. Fitzpatrick said, that, you know, you put yourselves in those shoes. If you're going to have an agency that's going to collect for you, you would go with that agency, you would think. So that would be the pressure.
So, and I had advised them that this legislature, I didn't speak for you, but I said, you know, told them the facts that this legislature has talked about room tax on short-term rentals before and looking at amending local law or to be able to do so. So after they responded, I did say that to them.
And if you like, I one suggestion would be is my office could send them a letter that we've been asked to contemplate a local law and just kind of lay it on the table and send it to the contact person. And in the meantime, we could amend the current law for next month and see if we get any movement. That would be my suggestion at this point.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
On the Airbnb, Jack, what are they paying us? Are they paying us 4%, 5%? They're giving us the whole thing that they're collecting? Or
Four.
So we have cabins we rent. Are we collecting this tax on those cabins?
Canacadia. Not the same thing.
You want to get a budget transfer ready, Tim?
Really quick.
We have RVs at Canacadia Park. We can start charging them.
Are we paying the tax? We're collecting it?
We're going to put a lien on ourselves.
Anything else? Did we get all the motions that we need? Okay, we're all set. Ready for adjourn, I guess?
I'll move.
Second.
Fair?
Aye.
Aye.
Carried.
We do have an ad hoc building committee prior to...